Hello and welcome to another edition of the Guardian ID podcast. This is Zach Martin, editor of the Guardian ID magazine. Large, high-profile events like the London 2012 Olympics need to be secure while also enabling individuals to get where they need to go without too much of a security hassle. Mark Jones, Director of Product Management at Entrust, explains how security and identity plans for these events are created. He also talks about Entrust's involvement with the Interpol employee credential that is used for crossing borders as well as physical and logical access at Interpol facilities and networks.
You know, events like this, I mean, they are truly massive. Anything where you are bringing people together from all over into an environment which by its very nature has the potential to be some sort of a target. It really goes back to the initial planning stages. All of the organizers of the event in the context of the Olympics, the facilities very often are being constructed. And so the subject of access really starts back then. It's really about talking about the importance of identity and having assurance of the strength of identity of all of the people who are involved and understanding what level of assurance you need. You've got, you know, all of the construction phase, and then you've got all of the organization activities. And then during the events, you've got a lot of people that are working the event with pretty pervasive access. When it comes down to the event itself, the default should be very, very straightforward. I think you raise the point of making sure that people can, you know, access freely and move freely within the event and really working to pay attention to the fringe cases.
One of the projects that you guys have worked on, and one of the more interesting projects that I've covered, has been the Interpol ID that you guys have done. Can you, start at the beginning, kind of, what is the Interpol project that you guys have done? What does it consist of?
Well, the Interpol project came out of, actually, we're very, very involved in the electronic passport world with Entrust encryption technologies, Entrust public keying infrastructure, being behind somewhere around 50% of the world's electronic passports digitally signed using the Entrust technology. And so we're at the ICAO event in Montreal. That's the International Civil Aviation Organization. I guess it's three years ago now, probably. The Secretary General for Interpol was at that event, and we got to speaking with him. Out of that conversation emerged an opportunity. Secretary General Ron Noble for Interpol is really, really very advanced in his thinking in really taking Interpol forward. And he saw the opportunity to put in place an identity card that would serve a variety of purposes. So the EID card there is a multi-purpose card, likely the first of its kind, in that it serves as an enterprise authentication card in terms of physical and logical access, but also with a goal of providing physical access to the facilities in the headquarters and also the planned technology hub in Singapore. It was also important to them to have a card that they could use to facilitate crossing borders in an efficient manner, not to replace a passport, but more like a visa waiver or a visa capability. And that card needed to be fully ICAO compliant. So it has to have, you know, machine-readable zone like a passport, that sort of thing, and all the digital contents of a second-generation electronic passport. So it supports the ICAO standards as well as the European standards for extended access control. They have issued that card pretty pervasively throughout the organization now. And they also have, I believe it's 39 member nations accepting the use of that card at their borders. It's termed the Interpol Travel Document Initiative, that aspect of the card.
Mark, when it comes to, you know, these large enterprise identification projects, you know, be it Interpol, be it, you know, event like the G8 or the Olympics, you know, what advice, what suggestions do you give to these organizers to, you know, to make sure that they're well prepared and that they have the right technology, the right, you know, systems in place so that, you know, identification security is done properly?
Yeah, I guess the firstly is good assessment up front about who you're dealing with. if strong identity is important, then you've got to have good process up front to have strong assurance that you know who this individual is. It's the same as with an electronic passport. The other is that you want to make that registration process as straightforward as possible, and not as, you know, you don't want it cumbersome. You want that process user-friendly. So self-service processes where possible, and then at authentication time, at the time of use, you don't typically need security and authentication to be in somebody's face. So to the extent possible, you're looking to gain strong assurance of identity and authentication, but again, you're looking to make that as streamlined as and as painless as possible.
When it comes to the technology that some of these organizations are deploying, you know, are we seeing more move towards advanced ID technologies, you know, contactless, smart cards, biometrics, you know, or does it vary depending on the project or the event?
Yeah, so I think it definitely varies on the event and the organization, the type of enterprise, the you know, who the end user is. There's a number of advanced technologies in play today, advanced biometrics, retina scanning, facial recognition. A lot of these technologies are already in production play in pretty significant circumstances. There are certainly airports around the world that are making use of facial recognition. The second generation passports in the European Union, the standard allows for use of eye scanning technology as well as fingerprints. I think it depends entirely on what the user base is, the strength of the mechanism that's required. There's no question that if you've got dependable biometric technology, it's a technology that's not going to give you outrageous false positive or false negative results during the authentication, that is definitely going to be the strongest assurance that you can get that you have the right individual. So if you're looking for high assurance, then tying a biometric into the equation is obviously a good idea. But it is a little more invasive.
Right.
And so if you don't need that level of assurance, then you may be using something that is less onerous, possibly a token with an OTP, a one-time password, and a digital certificate on a smart card is considered a strong authentication. That together with something that you know, some sort of a PIN, is a good strong implementation as well.
Is there any other interesting large-scale project or even small-scale project that you guys have worked on that you could tell us some information about that deployment without necessarily, you don't have to give us the name of the organization?
Mm-hmm. By virtue of having a full, if you will, passport implementation, that means you also have the ability to do passport validation. Then you can establish, if you will, a border. And if you can establish a border with today's technology, you can also project a border control infrastructure in a sort of a virtual environment. So a virtual border, if you want. So if you think about that, certainly in the context of, you know, the Olympics, the G8, the G20, you can project a virtual border. That is a border that is mobile. You need to move to one event, one venue. You can move there very quickly and have a virtual border just set up over 3G networks. We are seeing a trend for a set of requirements that's emerging where we have the technology certainly to be very helpful, and that is sort of large collaboration environments. Many nations in play with focused objectives where there's a need to collaborate. Very often you have sort of the collaboration of nations, but very little infrastructure to support them because, you know, the infrastructure's at home. And so you have this sort of virtualized environment for collaboration that typically needs strong security. So we've got a number of projects that are dealing with secure messaging in that environment, strong authentication, and technologies for open collaboration.
Mark, is there anything else you want to mention about identification for large-scale events or for enterprise systems? Anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
I think, as I said earlier on, it's a question of understanding who the populations are you're dealing with. And I would expect that, you know, you're going to have, you know, higher levels of assurance and strong infrastructure in place for people that have either pervasive access to a large number of venues or within the infrastructure of venues, or into areas where there's sort of VIPs. So there, I think you want to be very sure of who's going in, who's going out, and you will have wanted to have good control over those areas for a long period of time. When it comes to the actual events themselves, next level down is the staff that's working and the athletes themselves for the security of the athletes and the teams and what's going on there. It's much, much harder when it comes to the audience, the fans, if you will, but obviously there is still a need for control in that environment. It's likely important to have a system that can deal with a variety of credentials, whether that be smart cards, biometrics, tokens, certificates, something that can manage an array depending on the identities in play, as well as being able to move from one credential to another. So it's that sort of looking at the ability to control a variety of requirements with a single implementation.
Mark, thanks for joining us on this latest edition of the Regarding ID podcast.